Hello, my dear audience. I'm Peter Resnick, and welcome to the Dr. Peter Resnick's Toolbox. This is my third show on PRN, and already I feel that I have this great, inquisitive, open-minded, wonderful crowd of listeners, thousands upon thousands. And here goes Peter Resnick being delusional. No, I'm just creating my reality, first in the mind, and then it is manifested in the physical world. If not today, tomorrow. My job is to plant the seeds, to create a clear vision of what I want, and then do my best at doing what I do, and let go of the outcome. That's what they teach about the art of manifestation. And in truth, I have seen it work again and again. By the way, manifesting misery works as successfully. It's only a question what you choose to focus your mind on over and over. I want to remind you that we can communicate, actually. You can call me even today during this show if you have some comments or questions. And if I cannot answer the questions or comments, or respond to comments today, I will do it next Tuesday. And the number is 888-874-4888. Again, 888-874-4888. Also, remember I asked you last week to send me an email, and I would send you a list of 35 different subjects I could talk about, so you would choose the topics that you want to hear. Here are what the topics are, short few examples of what is on the list. Staying healthy in a stressful world, face reading for successful relationships, the healing power of imagination, understanding and engaging your night dreams, healing prevention of cancer, overcoming addictive thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. These are just but a few. Unfortunately, only 12 people responded. Thank you to those who did. So I'm asking again, for those of you who are interested, please send me an email to this address, peter1818reznick@gmail.com. And I will send you the list so you can let me know of the subjects you would like me to talk about in the future. Meanwhile, for today's show, I chose the subject that the 12 emails suggested. And the winner is, let me open the envelope. Ladies and gentlemen, the healing power of imagination. This was your number one choice in the hierarchy of priorities. I will not tell you what the second choice was, because I hope to receive more emails this week. Then I will put it all together and follow your advice about the subject you want me to talk about next. But now, imagination. It's a great choice. This is one of the most powerful tools in my toolbox. One of them, but not the only one. That's me trying to be a showman to entice you to stay with me. Listen, I have taught hundreds and hundreds of courses, spoken on the radio, on television, but never had my own show. On the show, I feel I can kind of entertain you as well. I can recite a poem or sing a song. No, I'm sorry. You do not want me to sing a song. That's when I probably would lose all my audience. When my children were little, I actually wanted to sing them a Russian lullaby, Spyat Ustale Igrushki. I had to take 5 lessons to learn how to sing that song properly. I also took 2 voice lessons to learn how to sing Happy Birthday to You. So I will never do this to you, my dear audience. I will never sing to you. Oh, I don't want to forget a couple of words regarding the COVID pandemic. Dr. Bregan, who has a show on Wednesdays at 4 p.m. here on the Progressive Radio Network, on December 10th, 4 days ago, invited Dr. Magallo, medical doctor, who who is a world expert and leader on early treatment and prevention of COVID-19. I very highly recommend that you listen to this show. Listen to the whole show to the end. If you listen carefully, I promise you will be encouraged, but also shocked. And now, finally, the healing power of imagination. A physician, an alchemist, a father of modern chemistry, Paracelsus, said in 16th century, a human being has two workshops, one the body, the other imagination. And our contemporary, Morton Kelsey, Episcopal priest and also a Jungian therapist and counselor, wrote, the key to the door of the inner world is imagination. The first man spoke about imagination as being a link between the mind and the body. The second, about imagination being a tool for exploration of our inner reality. It's my intention today to demonstrate how both of these statements are absolutely true, and also that imagination can accomplish even more than these two brilliant men said. And that's all ahead of us. But let me try kind of to demonstrate to you imagination around right from the start. If you are not driving and have a possibility and interest, just sit comfortably. Let's do a little exercise. Sit comfortable and close your eyes. And breathe out gently. And then breathe normally. Long, slow exhalations. Nice and easy inhalations. Breathing out twice as slow as breathing in. And think or imagine that you are a tree. Don't choose what tree you want to be. Let yourself see what pops into your mind spontaneously. You are a tree. And now become aware of what kind of a tree you are. How is the weather? Is it sunny or cloudy? Are there trees next to you, around you? Or you're standing all alone? How deep are your roots? Notice how you feel being this kind of a tree. And when ready, open your eyes. Please mentally recall your experience now. And commit this experience to your memory. We'll move on with the topic, but I will talk about the experience of being a tree when we speak about imagery as an exploratory technique. The healing power of imagination is a fancy way to present mental imagery as a therapeutic tool. It can indeed be an instrument for healing, but it's not limited to healing only. So before I talk about the imagery as a therapeutic tool, let me define what imagination is. First of all, imagination is a property of the mind. Just as will, night dreams, intuition, and reason, imagination is part of our human inheritance. We're born with it. By the way, each of these natural apparatuses would probably require a whole hour, just to be introduced as a useful therapeutic tool. And I will indeed in the future dedicate an hour to each of these tools. But today we focus on imagination only. Notice neither of these five apparatuses were created by psychologists, psychiatry, or philosophy for that matter, are all man-made. They're human attempts to understand life. They're just intellectual guesses about life. Imagination is life. We're born with a heart, with the liver, skin, arms, legs, nose, ears. Every organ of our body has its place and function. Such physical senses as sight, hearing, smell, taste, touch are there for us to explore and to survive in our outer physical environment. Just as the physical senses they have their function and basically essential for our very existence. The functions of the mind, such as an imagination, is there to support another aspect of our beingness, our inner environment, such as thoughts and feelings. So the second aspect of imagination is that it is a universal language of all human species. Think about an orange, English, the fruit that you call an orange, I called apelsin. That's the same image. And if I say, let's say, une très belle voiture rouge, unless you speak French, you will not understand what I was talking about. But if I say a very beautiful red car, in your mind, you will have an image of a red car. So the language is what separates us. The image is what unites us. It's a language that we all can understand and experience. Though we experience images differently, and here is the third aspect of imagination, that imagination is a subjective experience. I will say the word home. Home. What did appear in your mind right this moment? The image that appeared to me was, for some reason, my first home in Odessa, Ukraine. My family lived there till I was 8. We moved several times. So why did this particular home come to my mind? Not any other. And even within the same family, let's say if my sister and my brother were here, maybe they are, maybe they are listening to this show, and I said home, maybe they had different images. More than likely they did. Why those images appeared to them? All this is meaningful. Maybe another day or another hour, a different image would come. It's all meaningful and all pertains to who we are and where we are in our lives at any given moment. So it's unique and subjective experience of each person. And here is the fourth aspect of imagination. Imagination is a faculty of the mind that creates thought forms through which we think, feel, and store our feelings and memories. When we are actually imagining. Yes, we think and feel in images only. If you think, I want to call my friend, for a fraction of a second, you imagine the telephone and your friend. If you had no image or awareness of the telephone, you could not think, I want to telephone my friend, to call my friend. If I tell you, please connect with being happy or sad, you cannot jump into being happy. Boom, you're happy. Oh, being sad. Boom, you're sad. You have to think a happy thought. You have to think of some event when you experience good feelings or sad feelings. And once the images begin to pour into your consciousness, flood your consciousness, then you begin to feel. In turn, our thoughts and emotions are intricately connected and continuously affecting our physical functions. And this is the fifth aspect of what imagination is. Imagination is a link that connects our thoughts, our feelings, and our bodies. When you think, for example, mother, you do not think M-O-T-H-E-R, you see a person. And if you have a great relationship with your mother, or let's say you haven't seen your mother for a while, and suddenly, you know, I said mother, of course you will think of your mother. And if, again, you have a very good relationship with your mother, and suddenly that image comes to your mind, you have positive feelings, and the body relaxes, and your blood is flooded with a hormone called interleukin, which may serve to strengthen your immune system. And if you have a problematic relationship with your mother, the image will arouse negative feelings, and with them a weakening of your immune system. When we evoke images, we evoke feelings. And when we change our feelings, we change our physiology. So they're all connected. Our images, our feelings, our bodies. By making positive changes with our imagination, we can positively affect our feelings and our bodies. In fact, there are numerous studies which actually conclusively demonstrate that our immune system, for example, is strengthened by such feelings as optimism, love, hope, and connectedness with others, and is weakened by such feelings as fear, guilt, anger, and depression. And finally, let's take a quick look at the spiritual nature of imagination. The 26th verse of the first chapter of Genesis said, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness." We are created in God's image through God's will and imagination. We are in the image and likeness of the Creator. So we are also creators, and we create through our will and imagination. And therefore, imagination is the source of all human creativity. This is just my understanding of what imagination is. It doesn't mean that I know everything. So you may find that somebody may add to it. I will welcome it. So let's go over it. So imagination is the property of the mind, universal language of all human species, a subjective experience, a faculty of the mind that creates thought forms through which we think, feel, and store feelings and memories. It is a link that connects our thoughts, feelings, and our bodies. And finally, it's a source of all human creativity. And now, finally, we can talk about the therapeutic use of imagination, or the magic power of imagination. Here they are. The first one is a tool for exploration. Mental imagery is a tool to explore. Remember, I said Morton Kelsey, the key to the door of the inner world is imagination. Spoken language is a product of the intellect and can be used to edit, rationalize, fragment, deny, misrepresent what is going on in life, what I call making up stories. But spontaneously appearing images during a guided imagery journey, like I gave you with the tree, always display a complete unbroken reflection of one's inner experience. Now think about the experience of being a tree. If you did not make a choice what tree you wanted, otherwise it's not valuable. It's artificial, you know. But if the image came to you spontaneously, when I said, think of yourself as a tree, and the image came, what kind of tree were you? How was the weather? Were there trees next to you, around you? How deep were your roots? Because it was all your inner life. If, for example, you were an oak, for example, yes? It means that your subconscious tells you that you are powerful, you're strong. But also, what do we know about the oak? It does not bend. It will withstand powerful winds. But if the winds are too powerful, because of the inability to be flexible, it will break. The roots, how deep are they? It's your connection with your family, perhaps with your spiritual tradition. The same if you stand alone or you are next to other trees, it's your connection with people. And more, whatever the oak symbolizes to you. And maybe you were a fruit tree. It has a different meaning. Think what being a fruit tree, what kind of a fruit you bear, tells you about you. You know, I spoke recently about with a young woman who is raising two children practically on her own. She told me during the session that she felt good about how she was handling everything. She felt strong. She felt, you know, centered. A very, very optimistic person, very brave young lady. So, but, you know, when everything is too good, you know, you begin to wonder. So I decided to give her this tree exercise. So she first experienced herself as an oak tree. And then she felt she was also a willow tree. The image would shift from the oak tree to the willow tree. None of them she wished. It just was happening in her mind. In fact, she felt that something was wrong with her image because the image was shifting. So when she opened her eyes, she told me that she felt sad for whatever reason. I asked her what each tree signified to her. She told me that the oak was strength and power, the ability to be above all. And the willow tree to her meant femininity, beauty, flexibility. As a result of doing this short exercise, she was able to connect with another denied or neglected part of herself that wanted to be a feminine and beautiful woman, in addition to being just a strong and caring mother. So we thought of strategies of embracing and fulfilling both of these parts of her in everyday life. Let me give you another example of a 45-second imagery exercise that helped to address really a serious conflict. It happened a while ago, but I remember it so clearly. Let's call this man Jim. 28, now he's way, way older. A 20-year-old man came to see me because he said he had anger issues. During the initial interview, he told me about his life, which in many ways was quite extraordinary. He grew up in New York in a rough neighborhood without a father, living with a mother who was an alcoholic, who was beating him regularly. As a kid, many times he was suspended from school because of fighting with his classmates. Half of his friends dropped out of school before finishing 10th grade. Many got in trouble with the law, and some got killed shortly. His path was quite clearly defined. This part of his life, unfortunately, was not extraordinary. Sadly, it was quite common. What was extraordinary was that he had this great desire to study. His natural curiosity was so great that he read at least a book a week. He continued plowing through grade after grade and finished school with the highest scores. While still hanging out with his friends, many of whom were involved with drugs, he managed to enroll in a community college, graduated with honor, and in two more years received his MBA, right? Business in Master's Administration, right? Master's in Business Administration. During his college years, while pursuing his master's degree, and after finishing his studies, Jim attempted to start a number of businesses. And each business had almost instant success. Yet, as soon as he was about to be successful, he would do something to sabotage his success. He would get drunk and should not show up for a meeting or start a fight with a vendor or insult a prospective buyer. After 4 years of what he called hitting the brick wall, as he called it, he and failing at 8 or 9 promising projects, Jim decided to see a therapist. During the initial interview that he had with the first therapist, the therapist suggested that Jim, for some reason, had fear of success. It was hilarious how he was telling me the story. After that remark, Jim said that he wrote a check, politely handed it to the therapist, and said he was afraid of nothing and no one, and left. So coming to see me was Jim's second and last attempt, as he called, to be shrinked. Now, I'm telling you honestly, after 15 minutes of him telling me the story, I thought the truth, but he was really hilarious. That's why I remember him also so well. It would be impossible not to fall in love with the guy. But frankly, hearing his story, I also thought this guy has fear of success. But knowing his reaction to the previous therapist, I kept it to myself. At the end of his story, I said, I don't know what's going on there, but I'm confident that deep inside you know. My job is simply to get the truth out of you. If you are ready, I can do with you an exercise. So, of course, Jim was ready. Remember, he's not afraid of anything. So I asked Jim to close his eyes, to breathe out, as you heard, gently three times, and to think of himself in any way it appeared to him, climbing the ladder of success and reaching the very top. And then it was quiet. Was quiet, and after 1 minute, Jim opened his eyes with bewilderment in his face. He reported that he saw himself climbing a ladder, one of those from the buildings of his childhood. He was wearing a three-piece suit and white gloves. When he reached the top, he realized that he was on top of a Rockefeller building. Suddenly, his older brother, who was, by the way, shot dead at the age of 22, and his childhood friend, who was still serving a 7-year prison sentence, were standing before him. They looked at his white gloves, and his brother said to him, "Kissing white asses." Then they both turned around and walked away. By the way, Jim was black, a black man. I'm telling you this story, I'm getting goosebumps. What happened? Did I tell him anything? No, Jim did his own interpretation. He understood that he didn't really have fear of success. He had fear of consequences that will come with success. He had deep-seated fear that if he succeeded, it would be like turning away from those he loved. It was so important that the insight came from him in response to the images that came to him from within, not from someone else. With my encouragement then, Jim went back into the image and told his friend and his brother that he loved them, but that he worked very hard at making a better life for himself. And it was time for him to move on. This is a real story. By the way, again, it was happened a long time ago. I went several times, and he insisted, free dinners at one of his restaurants, then at another. He had a whole chain of them. He is very successful. And now it's almost 15 years later, we're still in touch. He sends me a card once in a while. So I want you to notice something. Jim's story is not only an example of the use of imagery as an exploratory tool, but also as a technique of making a correction within a discovered conflict, where I sent him back to make a correction. Now, do you want another exercise? I'm excited to take you through another exercise, and it's a short exercise, okay? Those of you who want, you can close your eyes, sit comfortably. You already know the drill. Breathe out slowly, not in, slowly. When you breathe out, you stimulate parasympathetic nervous system that begins to relax you. So you breathe out slowly, breathe in normally. Breathing out twice as slow as breathing in. And now think or imagine you are walking down a path alone. Suddenly somebody taps you on the shoulder from behind. You turn around. What do you see? What do you feel? What do you do? You can open your eyes. Some people for whom the world is a friendly place will report of encountering a friend or a relative, while others who are fearful or for whom the world is a place of danger will report being attacked by a stranger, a monster, or simply having some unexpected negative event. Then a correction is to be made, of course. Then you close your eyes again, go back to the situation, into the disturbing experience, and using your will and imagination, find a way to be victorious, knowing that everything is possible in the world of imagination. And then breathe out one time and open your eyes. Excuse me, I will have a sip of my tea. By making a correction, if needed, you change the inner template, the inner vision of yourself, inner program that will later unfold as a new experience in your waking life. Now, the second way of using imagination or mental imagery as a therapeutic tool is a way of identifying and, if necessary, changing a belief system. Imagination allows us to discover underlying belief systems which govern our choices in life. The feelings and behavior within the experience of being in the imagery journey are reflective of beliefs we hold about ourselves and the world. Please do not confuse beliefs with wishful thinking. I spoke to one woman who reported of being in many abusive relationships in which she was used, manipulated, abandoned. And when I introduced to her the idea of the possibility that there is some kind of dysfunctional belief about relationships that she holds, she protested and said, I believe that we are all equal, that I deserve respect, I deserve love, and so on. But that's what she wished. What she read maybe in psychology books. There are three ways really to know what our beliefs deep inside are. One is by looking at our lives. They are manifestation of our beliefs. There are two other ways. And one is our night dreams. And the other one is through these spontaneous images. Beliefs underlying and motivating one's behavior are not as discernible as our behavior itself. Let's say overeating, smoking, fighting. A belief is not a logical concept which can be rationally figured out. It's an unconscious template, as I said. We can also say that it's unconscious program that tells us most of the time how to act, how to think. Now, if you say, where do these beliefs come from? Many ways. Let me give you one example. But for sure, it's not the only avenue through which beliefs come. Won't you know? Just to give you an example. Let's say a child brings a picture and says, Mommy, Daddy, look at my picture. And they're so sorry, we're busy. Again, Mommy, Daddy, look at my picture. Busy. Mommy, eventually a child begins to develop this belief, what is important to me is not important to others. Because that's how we absorb information. We get actually hypnotized early on to how the world treats us. You know, there was a university, an experiment at a study at the University of Iowa. And they took graduate students, asked them to go into the families, farmers, and asked their permission to hang out with the family. And they had these two little clickers. And for every positive statement, suggestion, comment the parents made to their children, they clicked. For every negative one, they clicked. Guess how many positives were against each negative? Or the opposite, I will tell you. To every positive statement, there were 34 negative statements. Can you imagine? So that's how we absorb beliefs, create beliefs. That's one way. And another way, we come into this world, if you're open to this idea, we come into this world with set beliefs. That is from previous incarnations. But let's go back to imagery. About beliefs, we can have a whole separate hour. Back to imagery. Once the belief system is identified through the embodiment of the belief system, that is the image, if a person discovers this belief system is not healthy or life-affirming, he or she may choose to, quote, remember the images in a new way. And by doing so, create a new image slash belief that is more in keeping with their conscious aspirations. Let me give you another example, another story. Greg, again, I'm making up the name. It's a real clinical vignette, but I'm making up stories to keep confidentiality. A 41-year-old man came to see me because he said on the phone, his wife and his teenage children were begging him about losing a few pounds and not eating as if there was no tomorrow. He was 5 feet 10 inches tall and weighed 310 pounds. And during the initial interview, Greg told me that he experienced an absolute terror if he was in a place where there was no food. And even after he had a full meal, let's say there were some at some party, he would grab something to go just in case if he gets hungry, you know. So he gained significant amount of weight, of course. And each year he was gaining another 5, 6, 7 pounds. So it was nonstop rolling down. Over the years, Greg told me he saw a nutritionist to see if there were some problems with food that he was allergic and addicted to, and a psychologist to see if there was some underlying food addiction, and the priest who told him that gluttony was one of the 7 sins and Greg was supposed to pray. Neither of those things helped him really, although for some time he would slow down in gaining weight, and then again would continue gaining weight. During our, I think, second session, I asked Greg to eat a chocolate bar, or a piece of chocolate bar, which I noticed was in his briefcase. And then I asked Greg to close his eyes and to follow in any way it would appear to him the chocolate bar down in the stomach. My intention was actually that, or my thinking about what would happen, that he would in some way see like sludge, you know, how his body is not liking this chocolate, how bad it is for him, because chocolate really is, you know, that he ate was sugar and fat. But in the beginning, that's exactly what Greg was saying. I see this brown stuff. But after a while, he said to me that the stuff, all this brown stuff turned into white. And then white became snow. Greg was walking in the snow. He felt, was like days past that he was walking. He was falling down and getting up. When thirsty, he would fill his mouth with snow, but there was no food. He was starving, and one thought would not leave him, that he should have counted better. He should have taken more food. He didn't calculate right. Then the imagery became blurry, and Greg reported feeling very sad, and then he opened his eyes. Now, was Greg's vision a symbolic representation of the belief there might be not enough food, or it was an experience from a past life? We don't know. Either way, the images that Greg experienced were about not enough, which were clearly explaining his constant need to have food around him and to eat just in case. Past life or not, we had to make this life work. And after discussing the image of experience with Greg, I asked him to close his eyes and go back into the image. He was encouraged to do what was necessary to do to affirm life, to affirm health and security. Greg found himself back in the snow, but this time, after wandering in the snow for a while, he ran into a group of travelers with sleds and dogs. Now, what was it? Was it his fantasy? It was spontaneous, positive visualization, because he had the intention to assert life. These people shared food with him and gave him a lift to a village, and there he found his wife and his children. I worked with Greg for another 7 sessions, changing his eating habits and letting go of the weight of the past hurts and guilts, and creating a new image of himself as a man who was in control and respectful of his body. As Greg told me, it was so easy for him after that to lose weight. We actually almost stopped. The last sessions, we just spoke about life, other challenges that he had. But in 1 year, he became 190 pounds, which means what? He lost 120 pounds of weight. I attribute Greg's success to the change within the image / belief from "I may not survive, there is not enough food," to "I am not alone. If I need, I can have help, I can have food, I have friends, everything is available." Now, the third, I'm watching time. We have to speed up a little because I have so many things to share with you. A third way of using imagery as a therapeutic tool is to remember, a chance to remember the past in a new way. It's another clinical vignette I want to share with you. I worked with a woman who suffered for insomnia for many, many years. And she told me that as an adult, she went through psychoanalysis and relieved her conflicts and spoke about them, connected with her inner life, connected with her parents, forgave her parents, worked on everything. But was not able still to sleep. And she told me that she stopped sleeping because when she was 11 years old, her grandfather would come at night and would touch her. I think she was from the age of 7 to 11, she experienced it. And she was so ashamed. She came from a culture where older people are very respected, and she could not say anything to him. She was very embarrassed. And then when she was 11, he died, thankfully. But she never recovered from it. So she was always vigilant, always would fall asleep and then wake up and not be able to fall asleep again. So I asked her to go back into the experience. You see what happened when she worked in all these experiences with psychotherapy, she discussed intellectually all the issues. She verbalized it. Therapists were nice and empathetic. The problem was each time she would go through the experience, she would just re-trigger the pain that she experienced. Nothing changed. But what I asked her to do was to go back to the experience, to feel the pain, but to go back to the first time, first experience she had where he touched her, and to feel the pain, feel the anguish, and then to imagine herself screaming and running to her parents and confronting her grandfather. And then she opened her eyes and she started sleeping. Let me explain to you what happened. Actually, I delivered a presentation at a conference, psychology conference, and one time during this presentation, a gentleman got up and said, aren't you denying the reality of the experience? Aren't you kind of making her live alternative reality? And I said, no, she did not forget the historical event. What she did was changing her emotional memory from I am a victim and I'm unsafe to I can stand up for myself. I can relax now. That was an example of how to correct an image or painful experience of the past. Now, the fourth way of using mental imagery is simply to deal with the symptom. How to remove the symptom. And I'm not talking about just mental symptom, but even physical symptom. Just for a moment, imagine yourself turning around the corner and you see that the bus that you need to take is about to leave. You are 15 yards away. In an instant, you run to the bus before the doors close. What did just happen if you indeed ran to the bus? At no point did you say to yourself, to your brain, produce more norepinephrine, to your liver, I want you to pour fats and sugars into my bloodstream to provide more energy to my muscles. To your glands, I want you to perspire, produce more perspiration to cool down my body. And yet, that is precisely what happened when you suddenly needed to run. To produce all those changes, you did not need to know physiology or neurophysiology. You need only two things: the impulse of will, the will to be on the bus, and the image, being able to see that the bus is within the distance you can cover. Because if the bus would be a mile away, you would not be running. The rest, the body did perfectly for you. That is how an imagery exercise can affect the state of the body. All you need to do is to have the intention, the will, of what you want to accomplish, whether it's shrinking the tumor or stimulating your immune system, and then using an image, will and image. Okay, let me give you a couple of exercises so you would experience of what it is, how to deal with the symptom. Let's say, again, it's very important to address the source of the problem. But that's a whole other subject, will require more time. Maybe we'll have another hour and talk about how to understand, how to look into the sources of issues that arise in your life. But still, you have to live your everyday life. So let me give you some exercises for removing symptoms. One, let's do anger. Anger at yourself or someone else. Just close your eyes and breathe out gently three times. Long, slow exhalations. Nice and easy inhalations. Breathing out twice as slow as breathing in. And now feel the anger. Again, if you are angry at someone, connect with that anger. Remember, anger is not only an emotion, it's a physical event in the body. So become aware of where in the body you feel that anger. And now go inside of the anger. Feel yourself being surrounded by the anger. And now gently breathe out one time. Knowing that anything is possible, find your way out of the anger and move yourself far away so you can look at that from which you just came from the distance and decide what you want to do with it. You can burn it, you can bury it in the earth, you can sink it in the ocean, or you can let it be taken by the wind. Do it. Breathe out once and bring into a newly vacated space something beautiful. And then open your eyes. After having done this mental exercise, you go to the bathroom and wash your hands and your face with cold water, as cold as you can take it. Breathe slowly and deeply while washing your face. Let's do another exercise. That's an exercise for anxiety. Close your eyes and think or imagine yourself being in a desert. You are wearing a backpack, carrying a backpack on your back. And become aware of a sandstorm of anxiety, sandstorm coming your way, moving with great power. Quickly take off the backpack and put up the tent. You know, the sticks that you need to put in to hold the tent. Drive them very deeply. Think that you have very deep sticks. And quickly, as the sandstorm getting closer, go inside of the tent and zip it up. And now hear and feel the sandstorm slam into your tent. Feel the anxiety and feel the tent trembling under the power of the sandstorm. Sit in it, sit inside, till you hear that the sandstorm passed. And when it does, notice how you feel. Then come out of the tent. Look up at the sun and the sky. Then breathe out one time and open your eyes. Now let's do another exercise. We still have 5 minutes. Let's do the exercise for the pain. That, remember, you have to know where the pain comes from. The pain is just a message that something is not right. So, but let's say you're taking care of this pain medically, but still it's a residue pain. It's still uncomfortable, and you want to numb the pain. You want to get rid of the pain. You already received the message of what the pain was trying to tell you. So close your eyes and focus your attention on that pain. Rate it on a scale from 1 to 10. As 10 being unbearable. Now feel the pain, feel the full strength of pain. And imagine now you're holding a crystal in your hand. And say a silent prayer or request the universe to assist you in healing this pain. Breathe gently and see a beam of blue light coming from above. and the blue light touches the crystal. And now it comes out of the crystal and into the area of the discomfort. See now this blueness filling the area where there was discomfort. Everything becomes blue. When ready, open your eyes. Good. And there is yet another way, of course, to use all mental imagery. This is already less of a therapy technique. It's more a manifestation technique. And that is, remember I said we are creators, so you envision what you want to manifest in your life, and you see it over and over and over again. Make it clear images, as clear as you can, and the very important that you cancel any negative thoughts. You don't allow yourself to stay more than a second on the opposite, on the debating thought that this may not happen. Remember, anything can happen and does. But your job is to plant the seed through an image, creating a clear image of what you want. And it's very important you wake up with it and you go to sleep with it. Our meeting, unfortunately, is coming to an end. We can talk about imagination again in the future. I'm looking forward to receiving your emails, and I will be able to get your feedback of what topics you want me to cover in the future. Let me finish by quoting Albert Einstein, who said, "Imagination is more important than knowledge. Knowledge is limited. Imagination is not." So I wish for you, for this holiday season, to use your unlimited imagination to find possibilities yet unknown. Thank you for being with me today. I hope to have your ear next Tuesday. Peace to all who want to live in peace. Adelante.